morning. You might have turned up this morning and thought, where's the instruments? What's going on? Why are things a bit different? Now, I heard last night that things were going to be a little bit different, just giving me the heads up as a speaker. That's nice. That's great. And there's that bit in you that goes, it's not quite normal. It's not going to quite lead up to the sermon that I was expecting. Kind of want the worship to prepare people. It's not what I'm used to. But do you know what? This isn't an accident. This isn't a mistake. This is exactly what God wanted to do to get us to the place he wants us to be in this morning. I felt like I should have asked you before I started, are you ready to receive what I'm going to say this morning? Because I felt it had that kind of nudging you, pushing you, maybe somewhere uncomfortable that you may not want to be. But do you know what? Everything that people have shared, everything that's been said this morning has totally built to my sermon that I've prepared and planned. It also gave me an extra hour this morning to put something else in my sermon that needed to be there. So this morning is not a mistake. It's not an accident that things are different. We could say that about any Sunday morning, but I'm saying particularly this Sunday morning when we might feel it is, it's not. So this morning, we're going to look at the biblical character of Gideon. Sarah asked me, are you going to look at the Gideons, the people who leave Bibles in people's hotel rooms? No. I might just mention them slightly later on. So we're going to look at this guy called Gideon. So what can you tell me about Gideon? What do we know about him? What do we know about his background, where he came from, what was happening at the time? Over to you. Come on, give me something. He was nobody. Good start. No. Fleeces. The fleeces, so damp fleece, dry ground, wet ground, dry fleece. All in an attempt to understand what God's will was for him. Anything else that we know about him? Midianites, they were everywhere, they were under siege, they were being attacked. Anything else? It does say in the book of Judges, at this time, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what they saw was right in their own eyes. So Gideon was a bloke that was raised up at this time in order to do something amazing for God. So some of the things we do know about Gideon that we read about in Judges 6, which appear, is he was the son of a bloke called Joash. And he was an Abizarite, which is actually the smallest and weakest clan in the tribe of Manasseh. So to say he was nobody is probably a bit of an understatement. He was the nobodiest of nobodies. Poor old Gideon. Oh. But Baal worship was rife. Baal worship was everywhere. The first encounter we get with Gideon is challenged by an angel of the Lord to go and tear down a Baal altar, take a bull and offer sacrifices on it. Gideon, as kind of is his general theme, is generally unsure whether God is actually doing it, saying, should I do this, should I not? So he says, hang on a minute. Just to make sure that I know it's you, Lord, let me go and prepare you some food and I'll bring it back. So he goes off and he prepares a goat and he prepares bread and other things like that. So not just saying, I'll go to the cupboard, get these things out, bring them back. We're talking about killing an animal, chopping it up, preparing the meat, maybe marinating it in some spices, I don't know, nice goat curry. Grinding the kernels, making the flour, making the bread, cooking it. We're talking a good amount of time. He comes back and brings it back and he says, place it down on this stone in front of me. And fire consumes this offering to the Lord. And then he goes, all right then, I think I better go do it. So he takes 10 of his mates and they smash these altars down. But then we get back to kind of the uncertainty again, which comes back to the fleeces. But all this is happening against the backdrop of the Midianites just being rife. And that's where we're going to pick up this morning. That is the part of the story we're going to look at in Judges 7. And you're probably wondering why we're looking at the character of Gideon. Well, I was actually speaking on the book of Gideon in youth a couple of months back. And there's just something about it that really hit me. And hopefully I'll be able to communicate that to you and the essence of what it was particularly that God wanted to say this morning. So if you'd like to turn to Judges 7, we're going to look to 1 through to 7. Sarah's telling me to slow down and calm down. Steve did ask me this morning when I was testing the mic, are you going to get passionate? I think I might. And I've also got all this space to roam around and it's lovely. I like it. I like to wander. So I might even go up the middle of the aisle at some point. You never know. So we're starting Judges 7, 1 to 7. I think the computer may have died. James is just getting technical support. But you've all got access to a Bible or a Bible, someone with a Bible near you. Hopefully, I will read it out as well, so I'm not just going to, please read it to yourself. And I haven't got one. So, early in the morning, Gideon and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men. No one has ever said that in a church. We've got too many people. I cannot deliver Midian into your hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. So we had 32,000 to start with, 22,000 leave. More than half. Quite bad, if you think about it. That's not good odds. But the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will thin them out for you there. If I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. Pretty straightforward. So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink. 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down to their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that I lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home. So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites home, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. So we've gone from 32,000 to 300. I'm not going to try and do the percentage decrease in maths. That's not my speciality. Steve is quickly working it out. I do pictures. I don't do numbers. But what follows this passage is the complete and utter annihilation and defeat of the Midianite army. A huge, vast army described as thick as locusts. So when Gideon actually goes to survey the camp, when the Lord says, if you don't believe me, come with me and I'll show you. He goes over and it's just everywhere scattered. Do you know when you see these films, you've got these huge aerial shots panning down over an army or over a vast crowd, and they just seem to be endless and never ending and overwhelming. That is what Gideon was up against with 300 men. But they absolutely whoop them. They don't just win a little bit, they win a lot of it. It's this fantastic victory over them. And as I was teaching on this in youth, as I was preparing for that youth session, I just felt this phrase come to me, that there was something about the story of Gideon. It was, be more with less. So our current teaching series is Be More. And I called it Be More Gideon. But maybe we should call this sermon Be More with Less. So obviously I then wrestled with, what does this mean? Does this mean something to do about people and numerical numbers of people? Because that's the first thing our brains might leap to, especially with this story going from 32,000 down to 300. But it was a clear, no, it's not about numbers of people. Get your eyes off that. It's a distraction. It was more about the essence of being more, not doing more. So there's often, you've heard the phrase, we're human beings, not human doings. So often church can turn into doing stuff rather than being God's people. So really simply put, it's about being more outside of this building, being Jesus out there before we try and bring people in, which I think matches up with a lot of stuff that was shared this morning. No coincidence. So let me give you maybe a little bit of a provocative statement that I'll give it. Sarah's grimacing. She's like, please don't do this. I'll let it settle for a second so you can think about it, because I don't want to just rush on, okay? The ministries of any church only exist to support what we, as the church of the people, are already doing. I'll repeat it just in case. The ministries of any church should only exist to be there to support what we as the body, the church, are already doing. You may agree with that. You may disagree with that. You may not think anything about it. You might want to ponder it until next Tuesday. I don't know. I just think it's really important that actually, do you know the diagram that was shared by the leaders on Wednesday at the church meeting? So this one. So I've roughly filled them in. I can't remember the exact titles. But we have a traffic light system that we've used for many years. It's a very clear way of us understanding where our events and what we do at church slot into how we want to engage with people. So you've got the white events, the green events, the orange events, and the red events. It's basically a simple progression of just social stuff right through to really maturing discipleship stuff. But what if we add in a fifth circle? What if we add in a circle before the weigh-in? Because the weigh-in stuff is stuff that we do as a church. They are our movie nights. They are our social events. They are our meals. But how do we even get to that point? Friendships. It seems really simple. And maybe you think, well, this isn't a particularly deep sermon on stuff. But there is something seriously wrong with us if we've got no friends outside of church. Something drastically, terribly wrong. You're just fishing inside the same barrel. You catch fish easy, but you don't catch many fish. You catch the same fish over and over again. And do you know what the mission statement of our church is that again was shared on Thursday? To glorify God and extend his kingdom by living and proclaiming his truth in our community, not in a Sunday morning service, not where it's nice and convenient for us. Because we can have the best Sunday morning service in the world. We can feel really blessed up and woo! But it ain't going to change the world. But taking Jesus out there will. So going back to that statement I said earlier about the ministries only existing to support what we're already doing, what I mean by that is we should already be reaching the families of the kids that will one day fill our kids' ministry before we've got someone in place to do it, or youth, or senior citizens, or whatever it is, because we're naturally doing it. So it's the parents at the school gate speaking to other parents. It's just your natural, regular relationships with people that you spend your time with. And it's something that I try to instill in the young people when we're teaching them. It's about them reaching their friends, not about me reaching them and you've got to bring your friends to me and I will tell them about Jesus and they'll be, oh, yes, I understand now. I'm going to become a Christian. Because the best people to reach young people are who? Young people. The best people to reach senior citizens are? You're getting it very quickly. And we could go on and on and on and on and on and on. On Thursday evening, Sarah and I were watching a program on BBC One at 9 o'clock called Ambulance. Does anyone watch it? It's an absolutely fascinating program to watch because they get a real range of people they treat and meet. But there was one particular story that really stood out to me on that evening. It was about a 75-year-old lady who had called with abdominal pains and said the pain was so severe she thought she was going to black out. She did emergency medical treatment. They didn't have an ambulance nearby, so they had a specialized quick responder who didn't have another job to go to go and help. It became very apparent very quickly there was actually nothing physically wrong with her. What was more the issue is she had social care issues. She needed somebody. She needed somebody to connect with and just talk to and provide help. And rather than the paramedic rushing off to his next job and going, okay, there's nothing wrong with you, but I've actually got people who've got real problems, people that are dying that I should be treating, because I'm a specialized paramedic. I have training far beyond these other paramedics. You're wasting my time. He rang back to the station and said, you know what? This is going to take a little bit longer. this person needs more than a plaster, a bit of paracetamol, something that puts a, that physically can help. I need to do something to alleviate some of this suffering that is more than physical. So he stayed and sorted out her heating. He called the gas board. He went around the house and said, what can we do to make things better? And he referred her on to people that could help. And this led to a conversation with me and Sarah that went along the lines like this. Sarah says to me, isn't it awful that someone has got to this point? Isn't it terrible she has no one who cares? The answer is yes. If you're not nodding, it's yes. And it was at this point it hit me, and I think I said to Sarah, but isn't that where the church is supposed to get involved? And you could say, well, if she doesn't know anyone, how can they? But we're putting the onus back on them, saying, if they don't know us, well, what about if you got to know them? The reason that Lou has been able to speak into this lady's life that lives just up from the YNC building is because Lou has gone to her. She didn't come. Because we're going out. And this is the model that I see Jesus adopt. He doesn't just say, come to me. He didn't set up shop in a synagogue and say, come to me and I will teach you and then go off and be blessed. Good. Do you know where he went? He went to parties. He went to weddings. He went and hung out at wells with prostitutes. He went to the beach. He went fishing. He went to funerals. He went to markets. He went to where people were conducting their daily business. He had friends and he was available whenever and wherever people needed him. And one of his last commandments that he gave to his disciples, which he gives to us as well, is go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Now, there's many different translations of the word world or creation, and it comes from the Greek cosmos, and it can be translated in many different ways, but it's kind of like everything that makes up everything. The entirety of society. No stone should be left unturned. No corner should be left hidden and in darkness. Every area should be gone into and changed. And each one of us join in with a different part of the world. So you got John, who is a businessman. You might not think it, but John is a businessman. I only pick on him because I know I can. So John enters into that world. And that's where he has a lot of relationships outside of church. You've got Lucy and Lou and Sarah, and I've gone face blind now, but people who have children at schools, and they see people at schools and at gates and the friends of their children and parents that they meet. That is the people they will connect with. I go to work. I also now take Caleb to football, so I speak to the dads at football, which was never a group of people that I really connected with because, believe it or not, I'm not a particularly football-y kind of bloke. But that's the people that God has put in my path, in my life, and each one of you know where you spend the majority of your time and the people you spend time with. But they're the people you just need to take Jesus out to, and it's about being involved and caring in their lives. Not about giving them a tract, not about the first thing you say every time you see them is, you need Jesus, although it may be true. It's about speaking to them at the bus stop and engaging in their life. Fantastic. Love it. But funnily enough, I'm going to speak about the Gideons just briefly. I was actually reading up on kind of the Gideons and what they stand for. And you know, their logo actually comes from the story of Gideon. So their victory, they had pots which they smashed and trumpets and stuff they to declare the victory. That's where that logo comes from. But this is what they said. This is why they were set up. Gideon was a man who was willing to do exactly what God wanted him to do, regardless of his own judgment as to the plans or results. Humility, faith, and obedience were his great elements of character. This is the standard that the Gideons International is trying to establish in all its members. Each man, or woman, to make it correct, politically correct, to do God's will at any time, at any place, and in any way that the Holy Spirit leads. To me, that sounds like being out with your mates, in the community, with the people that you know, anywhere, anytime, and if God prompts you, you do it. Because I don't know about you, if you've ever ignored what God has said to do, the pain in the pit of your stomach, in that, Bill calls it knowing it in your knower. I've described it as a jelly bean that kind of flips around and makes you feel uncomfortable until you do something about it. But the aching and the agony in your spirit that you feel if you don't is so much worse. So much worse. But actually, to close with a story, if that's okay, which brings this to sharp reality. Again, a lot of the stuff that has been shared this morning, perfect, spot on. Thank you so very much. Is actually about us. Did you know when I was due to speak on this sermon, preach on this sermon, going back to March, yeah? So originally I'd planned to preach on Gideon in March. It snowed in March. It snowed terribly in March. We're talking like a foot of snow, like we're not used to it. Everyone panicked. Ah, I need to buy water from the shop because I'm going to go thirsty. People buy weird stuff, don't they, when it snows? But what we did on that weekend showed exactly what this sermon was about. That sermon was preached through what we did on that Sunday. Now, some of you are thinking, well, I didn't help with that. I understand some people aren't able to, some people just weren't able to get in help, and that's fine. But I think it's a really good illustration of this sermon in action. Do you know why we had this opportunity to go and clear paths at the school, to clear the road up to Townsend House? Because people we know who we have a relationship know that we would and asked. Not because we're known as an organization that a disaster relief team and we set up an emergency number that people could ring and go, hello, this is the snow emergency line. I'm here to help. How can I clear your drive today? But friends asked friends to come and help because they knew we would. And we gathered other people. And the more we started clearing, the more other people joined in. So we cleared the school and there's Woody and Fee digging away at the snow. But isn't that what it's supposed to be? It's not because there was a generic post on Facebook, people actually asked people that they knew to help. And to me, that's a great way of embodying what the core of my message was this morning. And that's really where I'm going to leave it. It maybe could have been a bit better structured, but I felt I just need to get a bit passionate about it. So I'm going to hand back over to Lou for some communion.